Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and by Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. I use Daylight as my case management tool. It organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, and emails all in one app that's with me on my Mac, iPhone, and iPad. I use Daylight on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases, delegate tasks to each other, and see everyone's schedule, all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools I use to stay organized and increase efficiency. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight for free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 43 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as always. And boy, am I really, I'm really excited about our show today with my guest, Nicole Black, who's somebody that I've followed and read for a long time in the legal technology space. So I'm really excited about that. Nicole is a Rochester, New York attorney and director of business and community relations at MyCase. Now, MyCase is another web-based law practice management software system. And at some point, we'll spend a little more time talking about MyCase itself. But for right now, we're going to talk about Nicole and her role as a legal technologist. She's been blogging since 2005 and has written a weekly column for the Daily Record since 2007. She's the author of the book Cloud Computing for Lawyers, and she co-authored two other books, Social Media for Lawyers, The Next Frontier, as well as a legal treatise called Criminal Law in New York. She claims she's distracted by the potential of bright and shiny tech gadgets along with food and wine, but clearly she's pretty focused to be able to do all that she does. And you can follow her on Twitter at Nikki Black, that's N-I-K-I Black, or you can reach out to her via email at nikki.black@mycase.com, and we'll have those notes in the show notes. So let's have a chat with Nicole Black. Nicole Black, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to have an opportunity to chat with Nicole. In prepping for this podcast and reading back through Nicole's bio material and what have you, I got exhausted looking at all the things that you do and have done in the legal space. And you're an attorney, a legal technology evangelist, accomplished author, a prolific blogger. You've been a guest on a bunch of podcasts. And on top of all of that, you're a wife and a mother. Did you have one child or?
Two girls.
Two girls. So how the heck do you do all that?
Well, I'm fortunate enough to work remotely from California-based company, my case. So that makes it easier. And I like to be busy. I don't like to sit still very long. So that helps too.
Well, clearly that's the case. Nicole, share with our audience a little bit of your background story, how you came to be where you are today, and how all these things fit together.
Okay, well, so I graduated from law school in 95 here in New York, was with the Monroe County Public Defender's Office for about 4 years. Then I was a civil litigator with a firm for another 4 years, give or take. And at that point, I'd had my first kid. And I just, it's one of those things where I just knew that that was not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And so I figured I would just take a year or two off, have another kid, and see where things went. So that's what I did. It was a very circuitous path. I ended up where I am now today. So in 2005, I hung a shingle doing contract work for other lawyers. I started blogging. And from there, I ended up co-authoring 2 books, and I wrote another book, and I started speaking about the intersection of law and technology and became very focused on emerging technologies, social media at first, then mobile computing and cloud computing and how lawyers could use them in their practices. And in 2012, I was hired by MyCase, the company that I now work for. I've been with them for 4 years in the position is legal technology evangelist. It's a title that is very Silicon Valley.
Absolutely. It's great.
Yeah. So that's how I ended up. Very circuitous route. But
I had somebody who, just a complete aside, I had somebody who handed me their business card just the other day. And on it, it said a legal technology goddess.
That's even better than mine, I guess.
I got a huge kick out of that. Well, let's go back a little bit, because you really have been on the cutting edge of a lot of things with respect to the intersection of the law, the practice of law, and what's going on in our society. You started blogging back in 2005. That's about the time that blogging first started to become part of our nomenclature, part of our consciousness. How did you get started, and what was that blog all about?
Well, so just to preface that, I've always actually been interested in technology. I took I used to use the TRS-80 computer. My dad had brought that home when I was young, and I learned how to program in BASIC, and then I took a programming class in college and learned to program in Pascal just for a semester. When I was with that civil litigation law firm, in about 2002, I told them they needed a website, and I built a website for them. At the time, I don't think they really appreciated the value of that, but I think pretty quickly they realized it was a valuable thing I'd done for them for free that they ended up using the basis of that for years.
And really on the cutting edge of that type of practice, particularly for law firms.
Yeah, especially in 2002 and 2003. Yeah, so in 2005, what happened was I built my website for doing contract work for other lawyers. And I had that, and I was ready to go. And I had lunch with my cousin, who's a lawyer in Rochester, who's always sort of been my mentor. And I told him what I was planning to do. And as we walked away from lunch, he looked over his shoulder and he said, "You know, I heard about this thing called blogging on NPR this morning. You might want to look into that." And I hadn't heard of blogging at that point, and I did some research on it and decided that it would be a great way for me to have something to do every day, sort of until I got hired by people, showcase my writing skills, which has always been something I've enjoyed and I'm good at, show that I was still current on the changes in the law, and that I did have analytical skills. And so what I did was I started, the blog was called Sui Generis, a New York law blog. And in the beginning, I was trying to target other lawyers. So I wrote about New York Court of Appeals cases as they came down, you know, criminal cases and cases that were relevant to civil litigation, because those were the areas that I know. And so I would write about those. And then I started writing about legal humor posts, and that eventually became a different blog called Legal Antics, which was a pretty popular blog for a while. Then I had a women lawyers blog that I started as well. So I had like 3 or 4 blogs going at one point. So yeah, I love to write, and it just gave me structure and a way to think about things and share my thoughts and speak into the ether, I guess.
And to satisfy my geek nature, what platform were you using back in the day?
I still use it. It's TypePad. I've always liked TypePad.
You've stuck with TypePad.
Yeah. It's simple. It's easy. It's not the best looking. And my blogs certainly have not been updated in a long time. But I've always liked TypePad. It's very user-friendly.
Well, I think it speaks to the issue of you can put makeup on a pig as much as you want. You know, at the end of the day, unless the content of what you're writing about is interesting to the reader, it doesn't matter how pretty it looks. It helps, but first and foremost, you have to have something to say, and you have to be able to say it well.
Right.
And clearly you have done that. I mean, I remember I was in law school. I got out of law school in 2004, and I think in the last semester I took a class in the evening, and there was a fellow who was a journalist who was referring to this new journalistic opportunity called blogging. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And I was pretty wired into the technology scene at the time. So for, you know, you starting two or three blogs in 2005, that's, you're really on the forefront of that. And content marketing, we didn't have that as a buzzword in 2005, but clearly that's what you were taking advantage of, content marketing.
Right. And it was also a great way. I mean, there are people that came before me, Bob Ambrosi and Carolyn Elephant, and have been blogging since, I want to say, 2002, each of them. So, but there were only a handful of us that were doing it at that point. So it was a great way to meet all of these attorneys and connect with them. And eventually, you know, Carolyn reached out to me. She had a contract with the ABA to write the book Social Media for Lawyers. And I'd met her a few times at conferences. And she reached out to me because she needed a co-author and wanted to see if I wanted to help her write that book. And so, you know, these connections that I made initially from blogging really have paid off and helped me get where I am. And I'm convinced that there's no way that in a decade I would have authored three books, you know, and done all the other things that I've done, you know, all the places that I've written, places that I've been quoted, like the New York Times. Whoever would have thought I'd be quoted in the New York Times?
Yeah, really?
None of that would have happened if it wasn't for this particular platform at that particular time. I just would still be in my basement doing contract work for other lawyers and maybe writing for the local legal newspaper, which would have been great too. You know, but it'd be a very different path.
Different path. So that's a perfect segue. Let's talk about the books that you've written. So was Social Media for Lawyers the first one?
Actually, prior to that, what happened was I know one of the local judges, and she'd hired me to do some work for her. She's also an attorney, a town court judge. And a year later, you know, I did some writing for her after I hung this shingle. And a year later, she reached out to me. She was the co-author of Criminal Law in New York. It's a Thompson West treatise on substantive criminal law. And her co-author had decided that he no longer wanted to do that book. He had another book that he wanted to focus on. And she asked if I wanted to join as co-author. And so that was actually my first book. I didn't write the book, but every year I do the update. And I've been doing that since 2007. I can't recall exactly. And then Carolyn reached out to me in 2009. About the Social Media for Lawyers book. And we wrote that one very quickly because we both already had a lot of content that had permission to sort of reuse and repurpose. And then since I had an editor at the ABA and I was becoming really interested in cloud computing and I started writing about that a lot, I pitched the idea of a book to him for my Cloud Computing for Lawyers book and started writing that in 2010. And that one took a lot longer to get published because it got a lot more peer reviewing. I think because it was such a unique concept and they wanted to make sure that everything was correct before it was published because cloud computing was so new at the time. So that was published in 2012. So those are the three books.
Well, I think we probably could spend an hour talking about each one. To cut your teeth with a treatise on criminal law, that had to be pretty satisfying that your family must have been pretty impressed when you showed that first hardcover, you know, book off about your work in the legal profession.
Well, it's definitely, I love that I still am doing that. And I feel like it keeps my toes, you know, in the water. What's the expression? You know, it keeps me in the...
In the mix.
Yeah, in the mix. You know, I love criminal law. I always have. That's what I'd always wanted to do. And so I get to research and write about all the crimes that come down. I do half the crimes in New York and my co-author does the other half. And I get to research and write about them every year, about all the new cases that come down and the different elements of the crimes. And so I love doing that. And it is definitely interesting. It's a lot of work. And you certainly don't make a ton of money on any of these books, really. But, you know, that one, you know, it's that's not really necessarily why you're doing it.
I don't know. I just think it's pretty cool that you wrote a legal treatise as your helped write a legal treatise as your first book. I mean, that's a pretty significant right. accomplishment. And, you know, my guess is I don't have anything to base this on, just, you know, shooting in the wind here. My guess is that a lot of what you've written about has been the precursor to every Law and Order episode ever generated.
Well, especially because a lot of them come out of...
Exactly.
Based on what goes on in New York City in a lot of the cases.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff. But then I don't do a lot of the sex abuse crimes or rape. I fought for those, but I do the kidnapping ones and the assault and the factual scenarios of some of those are just heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Especially when they involve little kids. So that always sort of puts me into depression for about a week when I have to read all of those. Yeah.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. As I mentioned, I use Daylight as my case management tool, as it organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, emails, all in one app. And it's with me everywhere because it's on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. If I get a call from a client when I'm out of the office, I can quickly pull up the details of the case on my iPhone and then jot down some notes after the call, and it's all organized in Daylight. I use Daylight by myself on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can track the status of cases, delegate tasks between one another, and check everyone's calendars, all without having to interrupt anyone or dig through papers. It really streams your workflow so you can work more efficiently. Managing email is a big part of how Daylight helps me. It integrates with Apple Mail, so as I'm going through my emails, I can just click and save emails to a client or to a case. That way, when I'm looking at the case details, I can see a history of all the emails with the client or any notes that I've taken and follow-ups with them all in one spot. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight. to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. So let's move on then to the book Social Media for Lawyers. And by the way, we'll put references in the show notes here to all of this so our listeners can find where they can pick up copies of your books. Social Media for Lawyers, again, 2009. I mean, the social media scene in 2009 is a far cry different than what it is today. And the idea, I mean, I remember speaking at a law association meeting in 2010-ish about social media. And there were just so many attorneys who, you know, would throw up their hands and say, social media is not the vehicle for me to use and to advertise or market or communicate the accomplishments of my law firm. So you, again, here you are writing about a subject pretty much on the cutting edge of that wave. What was your focus in the book, and what were you trying to say?
Well, at the time, the book was about using social media, the importance of it, why it mattered, that it wasn't going to go away, and then how lawyers needed to set goals, decide what they wanted to accomplish, and then choose the right platforms and use them intelligently. So that was what we tried to accomplish with the book. And a lot of the introductory chapters are still applicable today, but then the ones where we dive into each platform are incredibly outdated because of screenshots and are different. The platforms have changed. But at that time, that was the main focus. I've since become a lot more interested in the using social media to mine for evidence and to research jurors, because that's what's popping up all the time.
Yeah, you stole my thunder there, because so just step back for a little bit. So at the time, we're talking about Facebook and kind of its early iterations. I don't know, in 2000, was Twitter available in 2009?
Yeah, Twitter was came out in about 2000, and Twitter was rolled out in 2007, and I was on it in about 2008 because Kevin O'Keefe,
right,
wrote on his law blog that, and I'd already signed up for Twitter, but I thought I didn't understand it, and I didn't see the value. But he said lawyers should really start looking at Twitter, and so I jumped on. I already had an account, but I started actually actively using it in about 2008 because Kevin O'Keefe had written about it. And, you know, he's another person who's always sort of got his finger on the pulse of what's going on and has a lot of insight into tech as well.
Yeah, he is, and as you said, Carol Elephant, Bob Ambrosia, and frankly, you have been on that cutting edge. And so, but now we're seeing, as you said, more and more lawyers have to recognize the role that social media plays in our culture. And if you're doing criminal defense or civil litigation or anything involving, you know, folks in the public, you absolutely need to consider their presence on social media platforms for evidentiary purposes or just simply background information.
Now lawyers are really scrambling to understand this information because their opponents are using it and it's affecting their cases. And one of my favorite stories that I tell when I give presentations on this is when I knew that the tide had turned was in 2010. There was an article in the local newspaper. A local reporter, Gary Craig, had been in federal court to cover a case. And while they were waiting for that case to be called, someone was brought out to be arraigned. He happened to be a Hell's Angel who was already incarcerated, and he was being charged with a new crime. And I can't remember if it was tampering with a witness or violating an order of protection, but it had something to do with reaching out to somebody that they weren't supposed to contact. And what it was, and so the judge's job is to, arraign him and advise him of the crime that he's alleged to have committed and make sure he understands it. But the judge read the allegations, which were that the person poked someone on Facebook. And the judge said, I have no idea what this means. And, said to the prosecutor, do you know what that means? The prosecutor said, I don't know. The defense attorney said, I have no clue. So he opened it up to the peanut gallery and he said, can someone in the room tell me, what does this mean? What is a poke on Facebook? And the reporter said, I stood up and said, well, Your Honor, it just means that they sent someone a message. Basically, they got a message that said, you've been poked by so-and-so. Said, okay, I understand what happened. Now I can arraign him. But so to me, that was the first time I'd ever seen it come up in court. And that's when I knew that the tide was going to turn. This was in about mid-2010, that it was going to start affecting cases and lawyers. It was no longer going to be this uphill battle to make them listen. They were going to start to want to hear about it. And that's what happened. So it was very interesting to watch it.
We had Brett Burney on the podcast a little while ago. And one of the observations he made was that if attorneys aren't doing, due diligence on their cases using the available social media platforms, that they're really committing malpractice in a way, because it's there. It's information that can absolutely affect your case, and you have an obligation in terms of meeting the ethical responsibilities of being technically competent to be able to do that research. So I don't know that attorneys can stick their heads in the sand anymore and say, I don't do social media.
Well, I don't think they can. And Florida, surprisingly, a month or two ago, added a technology competence CLE requirement. So you have to have 3 credits of CLE in technology every 2 years in Florida now. And the first time they're the first ones to roll that out, but I think that's just a sign of things to come, especially as I think 22 or 23 states have adopted the comment to Model Rule 1.1, indicating that lawyers have an obligation to stay abreast of changes in tech. So, it's happening, and it's
going to be happening more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So then you move into your book, Cloud Computing for Lawyers. And I don't know if you share this opinion, but in it's my view that the pendulum has kind of swung completely the other way to the point where I know attorneys who say, I'm not going to use the cloud. I'm not even going to think about the cloud, because the whole concept of having data up in the cloud to me sounds like the potential for compromising confidentiality. And while I think that's certainly a consideration, I'm not sure that I would let that tail wag my dog. Clearly, lawyers are adopting use of cloud technology more and more.
Right.
But there are some that steadfastly oppose doing so because they're worried about confidentiality of data. So how does an attorney balance those two considerations?
I mean, I would say that the tide has turned, that lawyers are, in my experience, and I would say in about mid-2013, lawyers began to accept the fact that it was okay to put confidential client data in the cloud, and they were less concerned with the security issues. That does not, I don't mean to say that they are not concerned and they shouldn't be concerned, but here's the thing about cloud computing. You know, the ABA's Legal Technology Survey report will tell you that when you ask lawyers, are you using SaaS or cloud computing in your law practice? About 33% will say that they do. But if you ask them, are you storing your data on, you know, are you using online storage or Dropbox? That number jumps to 60%. So lawyers are using cloud computing. Half the time they don't know that they're using it. And cloud computing is truly the wave of the future. For the vast majority of lawyers, all of the ethics opinions that have been handed down in the different jurisdictions indicate that lawyers can safely store most client data in the cloud, as long as they take steps to ensure that they have thoroughly vetted the provider and ensured that steps are being taken to, reasonable steps are being taken to secure that data and keep it confidential. And it's no different than outsourcing your data to any other third party. You've always had to take those same steps. You have to ask a different set of questions, but it's still a similar vetting process. And so when it comes to most data, it's okay to put it in the cloud. But all of the opinions also, for the most part, indicate that when it comes to particularly sensitive data, or sometimes particular areas of practice where you think a FISA warrant or something like that might be served upon the cloud provider, there's some different considerations. Certain data maybe shouldn't be put in the cloud. Certain data you should hold the encryption key to. But if the small minority of lawyers run that risk, it's very rare that the government's going to want to access the data for most of your clients, for most practice areas. So, and another thing that comes into play that I think is important with that a lot of lawyers don't think about when it comes to vetting the cloud providers is the more integrations that you add to, you know, some of these cloud providers will allow multiple integrations. They open up their APIs. And you need to understand that when they do that, you need to vet every single third-party provider that has access to that data that's stored in the main cloud computing program. So I don't think a lot of lawyers think about that. They'll use just integrate multiple apps into one thing and they just vet the main cloud computing provider, but that's not sufficient because all these other third parties are going to have access too. So you need to think about that.
Yeah, let's just do a little bit of explanation here. I mean, I understand where you're coming from. So you mentioned APIs, that's application programming interface. That's what allows one application to talk to another. When we talk about integrations, we're talking about cloud based platforms that allow other services, and you mentioned SaaS, software as a service, that allow other services through their API to access that information. So your observation, your point is that attorneys need to make sure that they stay aware of all of the possible integrations that could touch upon or connect with the data that they're storing in the cloud. Is that correct?
I think so. And sometimes these integrations sound great and they add a lot of
features and value.
Right. But they also open up your data to other third parties. And so sometimes, you know, depending on what you're looking for, it may be worth it to, you know, it makes your life simpler if the provider, one cloud provider offers a lot of those solutions in one package. But sometimes some lawyers need more flexibility and more features, and it's worth it to them to, you know, allow these other providers to, you know, integrate with the primary provider. So it really does depend upon and the amount of work that you're willing to do, because to annually vet the different providers and make sure things haven't changed since the last time you looked into it.
Well, I have now succeeded in migrating just about every aspect of my practice into the cloud. You know, obviously I'm using Dropbox as a storage repository, but my case management tool, Daylight, which we spoke about last week, I've now moved to their cloud implementation. My QuickBooks, you know, implementation has now moved into the cloud. It's taken me a while because I wanted to make sure that there was a proper amount of security and controls over the integration opportunities, just as you suggested, that I'm sufficiently comfortable now having those resources in the cloud. And it just makes my life easier for one, but two, it also, it provides a backup strategy for the data that is not the total backup strategy, but is a serious component of it so that I can assure that I don't lose any client data.
Right. Well, that's one of the best things about cloud computing, especially for solo and small firm attorneys. It really levels the playing field, gives them computing power and affordable backup that they otherwise wouldn't have access to. It's, you know, it simplifies and streamlines things, allows them 24/7 access to data, and also provides this backup so that when there was a fire in Buffalo, New York that I wrote about where a law firm's, the windows blew out and the law firm's papers, you know, files were all over the street. And Hurricane Sandy, all the large law firms in New York learned that it probably was a bad idea for them to store their servers in the basements of those buildings.
Yep.
And all, you know,
all their historical paper files, you know, that they hadn't yet converted to digital storage.
Also in the basement.
Also in the basement.
With servers.
Right, with the servers. So, right. Yeah, well, that brings me to my next point, and kind of as we ramp down here towards the end. Look, you, as I said, have been on the cutting edge here of technology and the practice of law. You've seen it firsthand. You've written about it firsthand. What are your observations about the practice of law, particularly for solo and small firms these days, as opposed to the rest of the legal environment? And where do you think we're going? What are some of the things that new solos or those who are trying to grow their firm, what should they be on the lookout for on the horizon? Is that an open-ended enough question?
Well, I think ever since 2008, when the economy tanked, things changed in the legal profession. And large law firms are not very nimble. They have built-in IT staff that are resistant to change, but they have built-in IT staff. So they are slowly starting to use technologies, but slowly. And that leaves a lot of opportunities open because a lot of companies are choosing in-house counsel rather than use these larger law firms. A lot of lawyers are leaving larger law firms and creating boutique firms. And the next big thing that's coming along that I've been following is AI. You know, AI and all the machine learning and all of the software that's being rolled out now that uses that type of functionality offer solo and small firm attorneys, it even further increases their ability to compete with these larger firms, both having access to cloud computing to run their practices and access information on the go, and then this AI, which allows all of these repetitive tasks to be done by the machines, for lack of a better word, when it comes to document, not even document review, contract review or creation. You know, it makes it so that a lot of these things can be done really incredibly quickly. And so you don't need a staff of associates to do it. This computer program will do it for you. So it makes it really easy for solo and small firms to compete. And there are a lot of practice areas that are opening up. I think with this election, I think there will be a lot of opportunities. It's unclear what they're going to be. Well, I'll have to wait and see. But I think that that does in some ways change the playing field for solo and small firm attorneys. And the ones that are the most able to spot the trends and take advantage of them under this new administration, there's a lot of opportunities there.
I just spoke yesterday with a gentleman that I hope to have on the program here pretty soon, who is building applications for the smartphone using artificial intelligence-based engines, that's the AI you speak of, to do business formulation document creation. So to generate your articles of incorporation and your bylaws and to simplify and streamline that process to using artificial intelligence. So again, a opportunity to leverage technology to make his practice or your practice more more efficient and therefore more profitable.
Right.
So I agree with you. It's an interesting future ahead of us with respect to technology and the law. Well, I would suggest to our listeners that if you want to maintain cognizance of what's going on in the legal field and the intersection of technology and the legal profession, that you can do no worse than to read everything Nicole Black writes on all of these platforms, all of her blogs, and read her books and follow her on Twitter, because that's, look, we've just spent a half hour talking about how much she's on the cutting edge, and you can benefit from that that wisdom that she has. So, Nicole, I really do want to thank you for being on our show today and wish you the best of luck. I'd love to have you back again. And maybe we take a little deeper dive into what your role is with MyCase. It's a very popular case management platform that a lot of folks use. And I know you're not in the sales portion of that process, but I think you'd have a lot to share with respect to that platform and how solos and small firms might want to take advantage of that. So hopefully we can have you back again on another occasion.
That sounds great. I would love to.
All right. Well, thanks ever so much for being a part of The Law Entrepreneur today, and a best of luck to you, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too.
Well, that's going to do it for today, Law Entrepreneurs. I want to thank my guest, Nicole Black, and give a shout out to our sponsors one more time, Market Circle, the makers of Daylight 6, a comprehensive case management tool and customer relation management platform that you can use to manage all aspects of your law firm, as well as Spotlight Branding, who provide for my internet presence, and they can do so for you through the development of your website, your electronic newsletter, your blog, and social media platform. So go visit them at www.spotlightbranding.com. I'd also like to invite all of our listeners to check us out on our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com. You can listen to our episodes there. You can read our blog. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can follow us on Twitter at The Law Entrepreneur. And also visit us on our Facebook page. Once you get there, you can sign up to be part of our Facebook group. And you can have fun with a lot of other listeners with similar interests and similar objectives and ideas in the practice of law as you might have. So until next week, thanks ever so much for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.